Hello and welcome to another episode of the RevVR podcast. I am your host, Reverend Kyle. Do you want to play a game? Shall we play a game? You know, it's all about content, isn't it? Right? Because, you know, if you've got VR, you got headsets, you got the hardware, you might even have some new cool deluxe stuff, which we might talk about here in a little bit. But what are you playing? What are you doing? What are you consuming as a consumer of the VR industry and the VR metaverse? What are you playing? And so I have brought on a good friend of mine here. We're gonna talk about this. Let me introduce. And he's a twofer. He's been on once before, and he will probably be on multiple times in the future. You never know. Alexander Mejia, how you doing, buddy?
Doing great. How you doing, Kyle?
Doing all right. You know, you are a man of many hats now, and that's why I didn't introduce you as, you know, who you are, because you do so much now. So tell us about Human Interact and the streaming and all the other stuff that you're doing nowadays.
All right. So Human Interact is a company that I formed last year to create wonderful immersive VR experiences. I mean, all VR experiences are immersive. Like, I don't know. I need to update the language on that. But, you know, we did it because we wanted to make, you know, an awesome storytelling-based game. And so our upcoming title, which has been announced, is called Starship Commander. And the elevator pitch is you get to talk directly to the NPCs because we use natural language processing from Microsoft that is next-gen stuff. And if you want to know about it, listen to the other VR podcast. I'm not here to talk about my game today. I'm actually here to talk more about all the other games that are actually out there and some of the articles that I hear about, you know, don't buy VR yet. Oh, don't buy it yet. It's not got enough games. Oh, don't buy it yet. The content's not there. And I would like to argue against that sentiment for a number of reasons. One, we actually started streaming other people's video games. And right. The reason why we do this is because it's one, you get forced to play other things, but two, you also get to interact with people who actually play these games. And you actually, from a business perspective, it actually makes a lot of sense because you get to actually determine, oh, wow, this is what people actually like in games. Oh, wow, this is what people don't like in games, because they all talk about it with you. And it's great being able to have that conversation directly with your audience. And, you know, you're providing something for them that they want to see. They like to see you. They like to see what you think of games. And I always read these articles. It's like, hey, why is there not good VR software yet? Or VR's not catching on because, you know, the games aren't there yet. And it's like, you know, we stream every week, right? So that's like 4 to 5 streams a month. And we play 2 VR games, and I'm just like, man, like, why don't I play more VR games? This is pretty awesome.
You know, for those of you listeners, you dedicated listeners who have been around, you know, way back in the long ago when Cymatic Bruce and I both did streams with our DK1s and our DK2s. We would do a Sunday stream, and if he wasn't doing one, then I would fill in, and then I started doing it, and then he was doing it. And you know, religiously on Sundays, we would have VR church, basically, and the entire congregation would get together and watch us play. I would sometimes get through 8 or 9 titles, and these are things that were back on the old Oculus Share. Now, I know that things are a lot different now, and, you know, the standards are so much higher. But to say that there's no games to play, that there's not enough content to justify buying the headsets, it's an interesting conversation to have, and I'm glad that you're arguing against it, because I feel like depending on how you, like, I feel like I may play devil's advocate here just to give the other side of the conversation. Now, last time I played devil's advocate, well, I'm still feeling the hurt on that one. But
I think you'll be okay on this topic.
Okay. So, and it's interesting too, because I just had this conversation with a guy. We've got an intern at our company this summer, and, you know, he comes in, he's a young lad of 20 something, and, you know, he's got college under his belt, or at least he's halfway done, and he wanted to play in VR, but not in the gaming side. He wanted to be more on the industrial commercial side. You know, he says to me, he's like, you know, we were talking about competitive gaming and in esports and stuff. He's like, man, VR, it's just going to take so long for VR to jump into something like that, because, you know, look at the cost of all the hardware and everything to get into this sort of thing. And then, you know, where are the titles that you would play in
esports? Dude, are you kidding me?
Hey, school me, brother. Tell me what I'm missing here.
Okay, so, like, gamers are already spending $2,000 to $3,000 on gaming laptops to do this stuff. Back in my day, we used to take our big brick computers, just, you know, yeah. Like, we used to carry them up both hills, you know, in the snow.
Uphill,
we didn't care that we had the 27, you know, 21 or 27 inch CRT. Like, we brought that thing with us. It was 100 pounds. It was great. But what I'm saying is, like, there are affordable VR PCs now that, like, cost $500-$600, and you're, you know, you add on the headset. All right, let's just say you're going to buy full blown, you know, Oculus Rift with touch. You know, that's what, another $700 now? So, like, the idea that the cost is too high for gamers to do this, for professional gamers to do that, that is BS. Second thing, just last weekend, Oculus ran an esports thing for one of their newest titles. It was featured on Twitch. It was on the front page of Twitch. It was like a legit esport thing. Let me see if I can pull up the name of that. I'm trying to remember what it was.
You know, I was on a panel at PAX East, or no, PAX West, you know, the only PAX, the PAX that was in Seattle last year. And we were talking about gaming. It was sponsored by Intel. And I had a couple esports players, competitors on this panel with me, and they were like, yeah, we just don't think that VR is ready for that yet. You know, the amount of latency and the mismatches between the hardware and the, you know, the entry level to get into it and all that stuff, it's just not ready yet. And I actually made the argument that you'll see it within the next year or two. And they all laughed at me. So, and I know an article, I saw that post about the esports thing with Oculus, and I was like, oh, good. Oh,
how long ago was that you asked them that?
Well, it was at PAX last year. So it's been about a year ago.
So yeah. And here's the thing. Was pretty close. No esport has ever come off the ground without the company that ran the game being like, all right, we're going to put some money into it. Way back even in the 90s, in the Quake days, it wasn't like third-party companies. The word esports didn't even exist back then. The third-party companies weren't funding tournaments. It was just like QuakeCon, right? Id Software put on QuakeCon and said, hey, we got a tournament. And it was like the first year the game was out, and it was a hit, and then everybody started doing it, right? So you have to kindle the fire with something to get people excited about it, to be like, yeah, that was awesome. And they go and they tell their friends, and then they go and they do that. So, I mean, we're just taking these baby steps here, but it's amazing how fast this stuff is moving. I mean, even when you were just saying, like, remember when we used to download off the Oculus share? And it's like, it feels like forever ago, but what was that, 2 years ago?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, it's been a little longer than that, maybe. But, you know, I keep having to remind myself that this is a five-year-old industry now, that it's been 5 years. It's actually probably been close to 5 years, like right on the nuts. And it's amazing to think about how far we've come in 5 years, and to know that the train kept a rolling and it's still going, and we're going to end up 5 years from now accelerated even beyond it. Do you follow Palmer Luckey on either Twitter or Facebook or anything like that?
I think I do, but he doesn't tweet that often anymore.
He doesn't, but recently he has been making a point to berate the analysts And I love it because I've been doing that for a long time myself. So many statistics and so many analysts out there who think they know about the VR industry, and I normally try to keep this either PG or PG-13 rated podcast. So kids, if you're under the age of, 13,
yeah,
cover your ears. But these analysts are literally shitting out numbers that make no sense at all. Like, it's just so arbitrary and random. There's no math to it at all. Oh, well, we're experts and blah, blah, blah. No, you're not. Shut up. I just get so irritated, and then to watch somebody like Palmer jump up and say, "Hey, yeah, you guys are all a bunch of jackasses," it confirms for me that I'm not alone in the universe in thinking that most of these analysts have no idea what the hell they're talking about. And these are the same people who said what you were reading and got y'all worked up and wanting to do with this podcast is, you know, oh, there's not enough content, so it's not worth buying into it yet. Well, I don't know. I don't know.
There is content because I'm looking at the Steam store right now. All right. It's like new and trending.
Let's look at VR. Steam together. Yes, let's look at Steam together. All right, so if you are not driving right now or you're sitting in your office listening to the podcast, we encourage you to go open up your Steam and follow along, okay? So you've got Steam open. We'll give you about 20 minutes to let it do its updates and everything. Hold on, we'll just wait here for you. Okay, so just pause and, you know, come back in about half an hour when all the updates are done and you know.
Oh, man, what kind of internet are you on? My updates happen in like 10 seconds.
I have not opened Steam in the last, I don't know, week or two on this computer, and it is just updates. It's crazy.
You got to get that SSD, yo.
I got an SSD. This is my new souped up powerful machine. I don't know. Well, anyway, all right. So let's, if we do a search for the store, we can go through. There's actually just under games of virtual reality.
Yeah, it's three down.
Yeah.
It's four. It's four down from the top. Like,
And I'm seeing all sorts of new stuff available.
Just under new and trending.
Yeah.
How many numbers? How many results do you have?
Where's the number?
Just scroll all the way to the bottom of the page. This is showing.
Well, I have 234 results under the new and trending.
I only have 233. What's the secret game that they're A/B testing you with?
Oh. Yeah. Every once in a while, people drop me in some stuff for my account. I don't know. I always feel bad because I'll get a message and I won't see it right away. It'll go over to my spam or to some social or something. I won't see it we've sent you a Steam this or Steam that, or, you know, we've given you access to this. And it's like, oh, cool. Mm-hmm. I got VR, was it VR Carts? Are you familiar with that? The folks at VR Carts, it was originally a game. I think it was on Share, and then it went to just the Oculus Store. And now I think it's all over the place. But it ended up landing on the PlayStation VR recently. I got sent a key, and I'm like, oh, cool. This is a fun game. I want to go play this on PSVR. European key. So I can't play it on my US PS4.
Yeah, so, I actually see it. Yeah, it's an early access game.
Yeah, VR Carts, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. But I'm just going to look through here, the just new and trending. So we've got Solitaire VR. Well, that is the kind of game that I we all lie, but we all love playing Solitaire, don't we? You know? Disco Time 80s. That looks funkadelic. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Do you see anything that sticks out to you?
Well, I'll tell you this. These are all new games, and I don't know as much about the new ones. And I think there's a really good reason for why we don't know a lot about these good ones, with the exception of Star Trek Bridge Crew. And here's why. I think part of the reason that stems from there's no good VR content or there's no new VR content is that these guys don't market like the AAA games do. The AAA games, like Ubisoft, who pushed out Star Trek Bridge Crew, said, here's how we get the press and here's how we get people to know about our game. Because the reality is that people aren't going through these stores and trying to figure out what's good and what's not. They just want to be told, hey, here's the big thing with the big marketing budget. It must be good. So if you're trying to get your VR title out there, remember, marketing is really important.
let's talk about that. Okay, so the marketing, is it because they're running out of money, or is it because they don't know how to market it? I mean, I can turn on, you know, they've got these stupid interstitial ads on every freebie game that you download on the Android store or, you know, the Apple store or whatever. You know, interstitial ads, it's always for a game with, you know, some robust gal in a, you know, in a Spartan scantily clad outfit, you know, whatever. It's like, you know, it's like Boobs of War or whatever it's called. I don't know. But it's so just depressing to see that interstitial ad every single time I play this game. I want to see an interstitial ad for a game that is legit. Like, I don't know, Vanguard V, which happens to be in early access right now on Steam. What about Giant Cop?
Oh man, Giant Cop. I love that game.
Yeah.
It was like one of the first VR games we streamed, and like I played it in pre-alpha and I was like, okay, they have a pretty good solid gameplay here. And then like, you know, I open it up, play the full version. I'm like, wow, this is, look what they did, man. They took something that was already good and they made it like amazing. And you know, there's some marketing there on the Oculus store, right? Like, that's important for people who are browsing the store. But I mean, outside of that, I didn't really hear much about it. And like, they were really happy and ecstatic. They were like retweeting us when we were streaming their game, you know?
And but that's like walking into a McDonald's and looking at the walls and seeing ads for McDonald's products, but you never see ads for it anywhere outside. You know, advertising within the domain with which it's delivered doesn't do you any good. So, you know,
I mean, 60% of your sales come from those things.
Okay, here's a game in new and trending. It's called IKEA VR Pancake Kitchen, and it's listed under psychological horror.
Now remember, those are tags that users put on there, and so a bunch of trolls went over and trolled it.
This is my new favorite thing. I'm taking a screenshot of this right now. So
yeah, go for it. But okay, so I think here's one thing that you're getting conflated with the marketing. And I can say this with a lot of authority because I worked in AAA game marketing for over 8 years.
That's right, you did.
You're thinking of like the direct to advertising to the consumer. You're like the interstitial ad, the thing that you go and like, yep, that's an ad. And there's like no question about it. Advertising is starting to morph these days. It's turning more into branded advertising, you know, making sure that people are writing about you, doing reviews, making sure that like when people go to the mall, do they see that your game is there and they can play it? Like all of these things are forms of advertising, and they're not necessarily things that you would think of as advertising because it's like, oh, wait, I'm getting this thing for free. Or, you know, you go on YouTube and you're looking up VR trailers and the YouTuber or the guy who's like, here's all the cool VR stuff, like just basically goes and says, all right, here's the cool games for this week, right? Somebody has to spend time doing the legroom, making sure that they know about it, making sure that there's enough material put together so that they actually want to cover the game, right? And so I think this answers some of the questions of what you were saying. It's like, do they not know how to advertise? And the answer is yes, they don't.
Yes, they don't.
Yes, they do not know how to advertise because there's more to advertising than just like, all right, well, I paid Google, I paid Facebook to put my ad on there. Because there's a whole PR game that goes along with that to making sure that people know about it, because you got to make sure that the press is writing about you. You have to make sure that people see your game title. One of the most effective things for video game advertising is, and this is for people who may not live in a large city, but walking into Walmart was like 50% of our box copy sales when I was working at THQ.
Okay. I mean, is that supposed to surprise me?
No, but what I'm saying is that thing that you walk into where they cover up the electronic guards to make sure you're not stealing stuff. That is an incredibly powerful move to put your game there and say, it's out now, go buy it.
I wonder, and I'll have to reach out maybe to some people and see if I can get some numbers. And it might even be too soon, but you know, a lot of you will not see VR games on a shelf. Okay.
Probably never because there's not a console. Well, I mean, there technically is a console, but
yeah, right. That, and that's the thing. There is the PS4, the PSVR, and there are games that are being distributed, and most of them end up on the clearance racks at Target for some reason, especially poor Werewolves Within. But anyway, I wonder if games like Job Simulator, I know Job Simulator was a game that was only available digital download. You couldn't go and buy it in a box anywhere. I wonder now that it has actually officially been released in a box to put on a shelf, if they have seen an increase or any type of special numbers occur because they put it on the shelf. I want to know, because they are really, you know, where's Technolust on the shelf? Where is, you know, GravLab on the shelf? Where is Rick and Morty on the shelf? You know, these games are not on the shelves, and so are they losing out on having that shelf space? Because shelf space is part of marketing as well. You know, like you were saying, you know, at the Walmart or whatever. But, you know, maybe we are having a discussion. We think we're having a discussion about gaming. We're actually having a discussion about marketing and about sticking this in front of people's heads. How many people, and this is kind of a segue here, how many people saw a game, an advertisement, a 30 to 50 second commercial during a sports event, or, you know, maybe they're watching Jeopardy and it just happens to be during, you know, after Final Jeopardy or whatever, a commercial for a game for a console they don't own, and they went, oh man, I gotta go get that hardware so just so I could play that game. And why am I talking about the Nintendo Switch and Zelda? Because that's exactly what I'm talking about. How many people went out and bought that damn Switch just to play Zelda?
I had to stop myself from doing it. But even adding on to your description, YouTube ads, they're completely tailored. Absolutely. And we see them all the time. And it's just like, oh, here's a pre-roll for a game. And you're like, yep, I want to play that game. Uh-huh. Happens to me all the time.
I'm one of the few people in the world that actually watches most of the ads on YouTube, because I understand that it's supporting the content creators. And so I want people to watch my ads. I watch theirs. It's just me trying to contribute to the community of creators, of content creators. So, you know, kudos to you if you also are a content creator and watching the ads. But those ads are so important. I don't know how many games, TV shows, movies, you know, events and craziness that I had products that I had no idea existed. If it hadn't been for a YouTube ad, we have become a YouTube generation. Our kids are constantly watching YouTube. YouTube will be around for a long time. YouTube will be alive to put the final little crumbles of ash from the urn of Facebook as we dump it out over top of, you know, Menlo Park or whatever. Facebook will be gone, and we'll watch the funeral on YouTube. Okay, because that's the next generation and what they consume. The kids don't care about Facebook anymore. They care about YouTube, and they care about Insta, Snap, and Chattagram. You know, those are the only things that they do.
Spoken like a true dad.
Well, hey, you know, that's definitely me. You know, that's me, good old dad. But my kids don't care about Facebook, and it's indicative of the future of that platform, if you want to call it a platform. But they bought Oculus. Are they going to do something different in terms of the marketing to get it in front of people? I mean, what are they? I mean, okay, so we've got the big players right now: PlayStation, okay, Sony, Facebook, Oculus, and HTC Valve. What marketing have you seen out in the wild or on your computer?
I don't think that out in the wild is the right space for marketing these things, right? Because the types of people they need to target are the guys that are, I hate to use this term because it's a very like marketing speak, but they call them digital natives. They're basically people who are on Twitter, right? Twitter is a social network for people who use the internet 24/7.
Yes.
That like as soon as they wake up, they use it, and then they keep using it all the time until they go to bed.
Pretty much.
And so when you're targeting digital natives, you know, putting advertising out in the meat space, probably not the best use of your dollars. It's expensive, and you're hitting a lot of eyeballs. You pay for the eyeballs you hit, right? And if 90% of the eyeballs that you hit, like, don't care about this stuff or don't know about it, then that's a problem.
So you don't think that putting ads in, like you said, meat space, you don't think that's relevant at all?
No. And think about this. All those sales are all digital on the PC side and on the console side, because the people who are into this are early adopters, right? In fact, I've actually heard people say, I'm not adopting VR. I know about it. I think it's cool, but I'm not buying it because I'm waiting for second generation.
Do you consider TV ads to be part of meat space?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. Okay.
Like something that goes over cable. So I used to buy ads for cable box, and you'd go, all right, Comcast, I want to run an ad and I want to run it on ESPN. And, you know, that was the most expensive place to go because it was the one TV place where you could hit males, you know, like 14 to 35.
Right.
And you're like, okay, I want to do that. And it's like, all right, you're going to spend like, because it was only regional, right? For like the city that you're in or the area that you pick. It's like, well, I'm going to spend like $20 an ad every 30 seconds that I run.
Wow. Okay. So
what? Those numbers might have changed. It's been a while since I bought TV ads. It's been about 10 years.
But still, did you see value in it at the time?
Oh, yeah. There was always value in that, because the thing is that if people don't know about your product, they're not going to buy it. And then they're going to write stupid articles like, there's no good games for VR, guys. Haha, let's not buy it yet. And that's hurting the entire industry. It hurts everybody in the industry. So it hurts people who already have games out right now because there's not people buying the hardware. It hurts people who are trying to make the games right now because they have to seek funding, right? Like the AAAs, the guys with the big money, they don't want to jump into VR yet because the market is small. Let's be honest here. The market's small. There's a million PSVRs, and then there's an undisclosed number of Vives and Oculus Rifts out
Let's
there.
Let's just say there's a total of 3 to 5 million headsets if you include mobile.
Sure. Like mobile, I don't like talking about mobile because it's a different audience.
Well,
like mobile phone games are not, you don't play Steam games on your mobile phone, right? They're two separate audiences in my opinion.
Yeah, that's another conversation for another time, but yeah.
But okay, sure. All right. We'll combine it all. Okay. So you've got all those audiences together and you're trying to sell them a game. What are you going to do?
You know, I actually don't know. And maybe that's the problem. I mean, really, what do you do? How do you know who your target audience is, and how do you know how to approach them? See, what we need here are VR market analysts, not analysts, specialists, experts. Hey,
the guys from the video game industry are pretty good at this stuff.
But we need to, so I don't sound like a hypocrite, we need people who need to start right now learning these numbers and learning where this audience is, because we're kind of screwed. Because, okay, so you say the gaming people know this stuff.
I wouldn't say you're screwed, because there are games, like, you can look on Steam Spy, right? And I know Steam Spy is, like, not an accurate indication of all the games being sold, but, like, the games that I pointed to that are good, that I'm having a good time with, they've got over 50K sales. Right? Like, that justifies $1 million budget for a game.
Okay.
$1 million budget's like pretty big.
Sure. Yeah.
And this is like first iteration. So whenever you do a game, you'll notice the games are always done in threes. And here's the reason why. Number one, you come out and you break even. But you're spending money, you're building a brand, you're building something that people go, oh man, I love that. Now I want to play number two. So we'll just say Giant Cop, right? So let's say Giant Cop 1 comes out and they break even on it and everything's fine. When they go and do Giant Cop 2, or if they go and do Giant Cop 2, I know nothing about what these guys are doing internally. I'm just, this is totally hypothetical, right? Like, they're doing Giant Cop 2. People are going to go and buy that game. At least there'll be, if Giant Cop sales were 100%, there'll be at least 150% sales of Giant Cop 2, as long as it meets or exceeds the quality bar of what they had.
And then they do Giant Detective, which is the third one.
Giant Dick.
Giant Dick, right. So they go for Giant Cock, cop.
giant dick. You said PG-13.
What was that? I'll edit that later. And then they go, well, then they can do like a prequel, you know, like Giant Police Academy. And then they can do the other side. They can do Giant Robbers, or, you know, Giant Criminals. And yeah, I don't know.
But do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
They take and they build on already good quality existing ideas. Right. And then they go and they build that. No game ever got big until it got to its third iteration.
But how do you take Giant Cop, Giant Dick, and Giant Detective and get them in front of people? Because now you've got two demographics you got to shoot for. And ignore the fact that it's, you know, between the ages of this and that, and ignore the fact that it's male or female or LGBTQT, FML, whatever. Take the fact that you've got half the people don't have the headset yet that might really enjoy the game. And the other half have the headset, but they're too busy playing Star Trek Bridge Crew to even know that there are any other games out there.
Okay.
So how do you tackle those two extremely unique groups?
All right. So do you know what the number one indicator of why a person buys a game? What is the number one thing that sways their opinion to go and pull the trigger and spend, you know, $25 to $40 on a VR game? Because that's what they cost now.
Educate me. No idea.
Number one reason is word of mouth. It is the most persuasive form of advertising ever.
Okay. Makes good sense. Sure.
So when I said you ship quality game number one, you break even. The reason why number two sells way more than the other one, even if you put in less money into building that second game, because it's kind of iterative of it, but it's just more of it, you know, different levels or something. The reason why it sells more is because people played the first game and said, yeah, it was good.
Okay.
Now, from a game developer perspective, you want to make it the best thing you possibly can, and you want to give your customer the best experience that you can. But sometimes games do that. Like, a very good example is the first Doom. When the first Doom came out, you know, people go and they played it, and they're like, this game is awesome. I got to have more of it. And they pushed Doom 2 out within 12 months.
Really? Was it that quickly? Because I don't really remember.
It was that quick. Yes, it was that quick.
Wow.
And when Doom 2 came out, the only thing that they had were 32 levels. They said 30, but two of them are hidden. And they added one extra gun and two enemy types.
Wow.
Right? And so if we were to look at that now, people would be pissed.
Right.
They'd be totally upset. It's like, we got fleeced. It's the exact same game. But here's the thing. When it's new, and when it's fresh, and when not everybody has played the first one, or maybe they played just the shareware, or they didn't play all of it, or they played it at a friend's house, when that second game comes out, they're like, okay, I'm going to pull the trigger now. Because there's timing involved in when people buy games. I mean, how big is your backlog on Steam?
Yes.
Yes. God, like, you can't even answer. Yeah,
42. Yeah, I don't know. You know, you said something, and I really think that it's important, because back in the day, there was shareware, there were demos. And I'll tell you what, that's something that I really enjoy about when I go to PSVR. And there's demo discs and there's demos on their store that you can download and you can play. There have been several games that I have become compelled to play because I played the demo first. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to go buy the full version of it, because that's I was a shareware kid. You know, we all you'd have a floppy in your pocket. That didn't sound right. You have a disc in your pocket, and you'd like hand it to your buddy, like, hey man, check out this new game I got. You know, it's just like the first level, but check it out. You know, I felt like a drug dealer. It's like, yeah, the first one's free, but you got to pay me for the next one. There's so many games that I bought because I played the demo. Where are the demos for the VR games? And even harder is, how do you put a demo in front of somebody who doesn't have the hardware yet?
Those are two really good questions. I will start first by answering The first one, which is going to be a controversial answer, devs don't like people telling you this, but I'm just going to give you guys a freebie. The reason why demos are not done as much anymore, I remember I said there's limited budgets, right? And they're like, oh, $1 million. $1 million is a lot. When you realize you're paying California salary, you know, experienced game developers to give you a good experience, and then plus pay for marketing and pay for all these other things that are necessary for essentially completing the package and making sure that you can make a profitable title, that money disappears really quickly, right?
Yep.
And so generally a demo doesn't get made anymore because that's extra development time. It you might spend a month out of it, and it's like, we need to get this done so that we can, you know, let our contractors go off to the next game. We can't keep them on all the time. Or, you know, maybe you're just like, we just need to get the game on the shelf so that we can start recouping some of these things so that we can eat, so that we can live, right? Because, like, the development cycle for a AAA game today is 24 to 48 months. And VR stuff is getting there very fast. It is getting there really fast. Now, some guys can push out lower quality games, but you also can only sell them for, like, you know, $5 to $10.
Right.
Or their mobile experiences where it's like, I'm only going to play this for like 5 or 10 minutes. But the people who are buying these high-end headsets, they want high-end AAA quality games. So here's the thing I was telling you about that most of devs don't want you to know, but if you do this to me, it's fine. And I guess I will go in infamy, you know, saying this, but if you don't like a game, most of these stores have refund policies. And they're generally within 2 hours, and they're generally within, yes.
You know, So here's how dedicated I am to the concept of supporting developers. When I pre-bought No Man's Sky, and I didn't return it.
Okay.
I kept it.
And yeah, but did you play it for more than 2 hours?
Oh, it's scary how many hours I have invested in that game.
Yeah.
It's scary.
I know it's easy to hate on that game, but at the same time, people put in a lot of time.
Yeah. Did
you get your money's worth out of it?
I am still getting my money's worth out of it. It is one of the most relaxing games I have played in years. I love playing that game. I get lost in that game. I have wasted so many hours in that game, and I'm happy about it. It's, you know, I absolutely love it. I think I've played, well, I shouldn't say this. It's getting close, though. I think I've played just as many hours in No Man's Sky as I did playing Minecraft. And I still play Minecraft, too. Right, yeah. But to me, it's a great game. I'll probably play it after we're done talking for a little while. but
there was a lot of hate behind it, right? It wasn't what was promised.
I had the opportunity to get my money back, and I thought, you know what? No, I'm gonna support these developers. I bought it. I made the conscious decision to pre-order it. I'm going to keep it come hell or high water. And guess what? It got better. The game got better, and it actually is a very, very enjoyable game now. And so I don't, you know, no regrets.
But that's your prerogative, right? You're allowed to do that.
But to return a game after you've played it for a little while, I mean, especially when it should be a percentage of total gameplay. You know, if you've played 30, 40% of the game and then you want to return it, that's kind of cruel.
It is cruel, but at the same time, it's the customer friendly Steam, right? Yeah, and it's part of what makes Steam an attractive platform for gamers, because let's say you buy a game and it just doesn't work on your computer or it keeps crashing, you can return it. And that is totally a reasonable reason to return a game. If you're like, I got duped, or this is not what I expected.
Yeah, but buyer's remorse after you've played more than 20% of the game shouldn't be a valid reason. And I know it's hard to vet why you're returning something.
I don't put my emotions through it. I just say this is the policy, and, you know, people design games around that, right?
I suppose. All right. Give me your magic answer, though, for the second thing that I brought up, which is, how do you put demos in front of people who don't already have the headsets?
And if it's the word of mouth.
If you say Best Buy, oh, okay. I was going to say, if you say Best Buy kiosks, I'm going to reach to the site and slap you. Word of
it's
mouth.
The word of mouth.
But how
it's the word of mouth.
Okay.
Dude, I do this all the time. I have people come over and I was like, hey, have you tried VR? Like a drug dealer. And they're like, no. And I was like, oh, dude, you got to try VR. And so you bring them over and I load them up. And I generally load them up in Starship Commander first.
Oh, well, of course,
Yeah, yeah. And then they start talking, you know, to the people. And they're like, I'm in the ship. I'm in space. Oh, my God, I'm in space. This is crazy. Right? Because, like, they've never experienced this stuff before. And then I usually go and load up, like, another game. And the funny thing is they always try to talk to the characters. Like, no, that's just my game. That's just my game. You can't talk to anybody else in these other games. Not yet. But, you know, they really like Giant Cop. They really like Wilson's Heart. They think it's like really awesome. And they're just like, shit, I want to get one of these. So here's the thing. I've already done the word of mouth advertising by letting them experience it in my home. And everybody who's doing VR right now, who has VR and brings in, you know, what do we call the VR muggles? The people who haven't experienced it yet. Is there a term for it?
Normies? I don't know. Screeners. screeners, because you know, when people come in, like some of the social VR chat things, like I don't know, VR chat, they'll have people like, oh, you're a screener. Okay, you're not really in the headset, you're just a screener. So maybe we'll just call them screeners. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, VR muggles, that's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm just talking about games, right? I'm not even talking about social, I'm not even talking about apps, I'm not even talking about like mobile, like and oh my God, YouTube and VR 360 video. Here's the thing, like
or Pornhub. I know it's amazing, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. But for me, like I'm not a really big proponent of 360 video. I don't go and sit there and watch 360 video stuff. But a lot of people who are new to the platform, they just love it. They really love it.
I love it, and I love stereo 180 too.
Yeah, and so I'm only talking just about high end games sold on high end headsets because that's my background. That's where I come from. And when you have friends come over and they try this, they will go out and buy it. I will give you another example of how consumer adoption happened with something that a lot of people didn't think that they wanted. So when the first Halo came out on Xbox, we would all go over to each other's houses and we would play locally. And that's all there was available, right? You could just play 4-player split screen and then you could link it up to one other Xbox at a time and they could be 4. And so, like, there'd be two people you knew with Xboxes, and everybody would go buy controllers, and then they would go play Halo, you know, 4v4 Blood Gulch CTF for hours on end until they shot their brains out. And then when Halo 2 came out, and it had multiplayer that you could play online, a lot of people bought Xboxes. And some people sat on the side like, I don't know if I want to get one yet. The Xbox is kind of old and everything. And then when the 360 came out and they announced Halo 3, that was like the point where just everybody I knew who we played Halo with, they just went and bought an Xbox 360.
You're describing the perfect storm that we need for VR. So let's try to take everything you just said and translate it into the perfect scenario for the future of VR. So a game comes out. The game that has defined the entire gaming genre for VR. Okay. We don't know what that's called yet. We don't know what it is. It is just the game. So you and I and all of our buddies who have VR headsets, we have our friends come over and we show them the game. And that game makes them so obsessed that they keep wanting to come over. But then the game too comes out, and
the hardware is cheaper,
and the hardware is cheaper, right? It runs on lower end computers, the tracking and all blah, 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 blah. You know, all this stuff that's obviously going to happen in the next 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, whatever, it creates the perfect storm. So now the game too becomes the thing that causes people to go out and buy the hardware, and then the next generation of hardware comes out with the game 3, and now everybody's got it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what we need. So, Alex, it's up to you, buddy. Design.
Am I making the game?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Could it possibly be that you are making the game? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think anybody knows until you put it out in front of people. I mean, like, the same thing happens in Hollywood. The same thing happens on the gaming side. Like, you can put in all the best intentions and ship something that's really well hyped and really well sought after, and then people are like, no, I don't want to buy it.
Oh.
And then you can ship something that nobody knows about. It's a sleeper hit, and then everybody goes, I have to have this.
Yeah, I don't listen to hype. I personally hate hype, okay? You watch the Batman versus Superman movie.
And yes, I have. I was like, what am I watching?
Right. And then Wonder Woman, right. Then Wonder Woman comes out and blows us all away.
I still haven't seen it. I need to go see it. I hear everybody's like, yeah, hey, there's a good DC movie. You got to go see it. I was like, okay, I don't even know what to expect because I don't even know what a good one is.
Right. What does a good DC movie look like? And now we've got, like, what, the sixth iteration of Spider-Man coming out. New Peter Parker.
How many times can Uncle Ben die?
Right. I mean, how many different versions of Uncle Ben? In you know, I don't know. And is it just me, or does his aunt and uncle keep getting younger and younger in each version? Like, isn't Peter Parker a high school kid that just he's like freshman?
You know what? It could be you. Just getting a little older and older every time one of these movies come out.
Oh man.
Oh damn.
Now I'm depressed. Oh, you kids and your Spider-Man.
You're saying your kids and your Insta Snap or whatever you say.
Insta Snap and Chattagram, yeah. I'm gonna come out with an app that's called that. And it's for parents that they can monitor their children's posts.
It's the police state.
It is.
It's Reverend Kyle.
That's right. Yeah. Oh man. So you know, it's interesting though that we really wanted to get together and do this conversation about the fact that there are games, and we determined that the problem's not the games; it's the damn marketing.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's like when you go out and you're like, this is the new movie that's out there and everybody's talking about it. Like, there's an entire system dedicated to making sure that people are talking about the movie. There are reputation management firms out there that do nothing but make sure that the reputation of something is high and that it's good, right? Like, these are things that cost a lot of money. And this is why you hear about a movie where it's like, this $100 million movie had $100 million in marketing. It's like, how do you burn $100 million in cash? Well, there's a lot of people walking around behind the scenes making sure that you know about this thing. The most important resource of anybody is their time. There's always 24 hours in a day. And guess what? The waking hours, however many you choose to be awake for, every single second of that in every customer is taken up. It's already taken up. There's no like, what do I do with my time? And so when you come in with any sort of game, product, book, movie, whatever it is, you are fighting for that time. And you are basically saying, hey, you know that thing that you were going to do? Nah, you want to do this instead. And that is an incredibly hard sell. It takes a lot of effort and momentum to do that. And that's why you're like, I know you said like, oh man, the store, being on the store doesn't count. But it does, right? Because like 60% of your sales come from there, because guess what? People who are looking on the Oculus store or the Steam store or the PlayStation store, they want to play games. They're already there. So it doesn't take very much to convince them to go and play your game.
You got a good point. Have you played the new Star Trek Bridge Crew yet?
I'm trying to. I want to put together a group of people. I want to stream it.
Let me tell a quick story here. This is something that I talked about on my blog. Go to RevyRStudios.com. Read all my blogs. They're awesome. I got the new deluxe strap from HTC. They sent one to me as like a preview thing, and I went to attach it to my, and I'm just going to give you like the quick Reader's Digest version. Went to attach it to my Vive. Turns out I still had a pre, didn't really think about it, but it's a different connection. So I called my buddies at HTC. I'm like, yo, what up? And they're like, oh, crap. Well, bring your pre-in. We'll give you a good one. I was like, cool. And they're like, well, while we're at it, well, let's invite you to this bridge crew, this Star Trek bridge crew unveiling at this place called Portal VR here in Seattle. It's an arcade. It's totally rocking.
But guess what? Somebody at Ubisoft set that up.
Oh, really? See? So there you go. Ubisoft made Star Trek. They gave HTC everything they needed to build this thing up. There was big banners on the wall and the window. They were great. There was a guy dressed as Captain something, you know, because he didn't really look like any of the captains, but he had the shirt on. Anyway, he kind of looked like if William Shatner and – well, I'm not going to be mean. I'll just leave that alone. But anyway, I love you, Bill. It's like – this big, huge event, and everybody's talking about this game online, and everybody's talking about all this stuff, and here I am. I'm swapping out my stuff. HTC, they've got some swag there. They had bottles and little paper things and stickers, and they were giving away drinks, and it was a good, decent event. HTC really pulled it off. There was a lot of people there waiting in line to try it, people playing the game. I have never seen a VR launch party for a game like that.
Yeah, and guess what? That's what happens all over the industry for all the AAA games. There's stuff like that and beyond.
Yeah,
that happen, right? But, like, think about the parties at E3 when games come out.
All right, so what made this so special? Was it because it was a big franchise like Star Wars, or was it because it was a multiplayer experience that was cross-platform, or was it because it was Ubisoft?
Star Trek, and yes to all of it.
Okay, so it was that was just the master combination.
Yeah,
that was the perfect storm for marketing. That game is going to do well for those reasons, and I'm going to repeat them here for you: multiplayer, cross-platform. What was the third thing I said? and it was made by a company that put money behind it for marketing.
Yeah.
Right. So you've got that perfect storm, the trifecta of win.
Don't also discount, and you cannot forget about this, the hundreds of millions of dollars of Star Trek stuff that has been made and that people already recognize when they see it immediately.
Brand recognition. Absolutely.
Like, what is the Star Trek? Like, if I'm Paramount, you know, Paramount owns Star Trek, the brand. And so if they were to sell that to somebody, they probably wouldn't let it go for any less than like
a gazillion dollars,
probably like $1 billion,
like
at least $1 billion.
How many Latinum bars would the Ferengi need to pay? See, I got some major nerd cred. There's some people out there going, yes, Reverend Kyle, yes, yes. So, okay, let's say they take another big franchise. Let's see here. What's a good franchise that would need multiplayer? I'm going to have to dwell on this. I'm going to have to dwell on this. So we need something where there's multiple major characters all together at the same time doing something. All right, let's say they took the Alien series.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. And they turned it into a multiplayer, cross-platform horror shooter, like Call of Duty on in space type of style thing. Somebody out there is going, they already did that. I'm like, well, whatever. But I'm talking about the perfect storm. And then they made a huge deal out of it, and they made big effort to put out big unveiling parties and demos.
Oh, and it came out during the movie unveiling, right?
Yep. That's what I'm talking about. That's the kind of thing we need.
Yeah. So what they do, what they're saying now is when you don't just launch a game, you make it an event. This right. is something that only happens once every so many years, and you either have to come here or you're going to miss out on it.
Now, I was going to save this, and we're getting close to the end here, and so I'm just going to go ahead and throw this out there. All Valve needs to do is come out with Half-Life 3 and make it only a VR game, and it's multiplayer cross-platform. Multiplayer cross-platform Half-Life 3, and they don't need to do any advertising because a gazillion fanboys will get tattoos to push this. But if they did that, Half-Life 3 VR, cross-platform, multiplayer,
boom. But it's done. Valve we're talking about. They won't ship something bad. They will kill a game before they ship something, right? Like, there's rumors out there that, like, Half-Life 3 has been gone through several iterations, you know? Right. And it's just, well, like, they don't ship it because it doesn't meet the quality of what they think people are going to want Half-Life 3 to be.
But if they did it in VR, there's no standard with which to measure it by.
There's the 2D games and stuff that people will measure it to, but still.
Yeah, but if all you did was take Half-Life 2 and make an official multiplayer VR release. Wait, they're doing that, aren't they? Somebody's working on that.
Yeah, someone's working on a Half-Life in VR right now, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I know one of the mods in the R Oculus subreddit, Wormslayer, had been dedicating, you know, entire years of his life to that stuff, and maybe he's involved with it. I don't know. I'll have to check. But yeah, I think just a big, good title, multiplayer, cross-platform, big market by a big name behind it, maybe a franchise or an IP that we're familiar with. You know, I kind of wish Nintendo would get in the VR space just so Mario VR is a thing. Because, see, that's the thing. When you say Half-Life to my mom, she doesn't know what that is. But if you say Mario, she knows.
Or Disney.
Or Disney. There you go. And we're not talking like Avengers or some weird off, you know, tertiary IP thing. No, we're talking about like Mickey VR, you know, yeah. Ariel. Oh, I got it. Here we go. Are you ready for this? The Little Mermaid.
Is this PG?
This is it. This is it. I got this. All right. Okay. The Little Mermaid 360 video, and it's called Ariel Photography.
Look, here's the funny thing. I know you're pitching me all these ideas and they sound great. And this is what video game companies do. This is what big media companies do. They go and they do the research and they say, what are the things that people are really interested in right now? What are the things that are hitting right now? And how do we combine these things to attempt to make a hit? And Ubisoft did that with Star Trek. And guess what? They're going to be successful.
Yeah.
The weird thing is that the AAA companies are always afraid to jump in and do something where they can't make, you know, Googles of millions of dollars, because they're used to, like, if you're Electronic Arts, for the most part, you don't know how to make a game for under $100 million, like, you know, product development and marketing all combined. You don't know how to do that because every time you've done that, things have not turned out well. Now, I know they have an indie game section that they pick up, but they don't make those games. They just, you know, market and publish them. And so the guys that are the indies, the guys that are coming in here that can figure out how to make an awesome title for $1 million, like, they are the ones that are going to be successful. And, I mean, think about this. Maybe $1 million, actually, you know, I take that back. $1 million is probably not enough to be truly successful on the VR platform. Look at a game like Robo Recall. Robo Recall supposedly had a budget of about what Gears of War did, right?
Didn't they say it was like $10 million or plus or something like
it's
that?
It's about $10 to $11 million, yeah. They said it was about the budget of Gears of War 1, and they in an article said that it was about somewhere between $10 and $11 million. Right? Wow. But look at the quality of that game. Look at how much fun it is. And when you look at it, you're just like, yeah, this is a game you have to play. Right? And I know you're like, hey, where's the game? Like, I think a lot of these games already exist where it's just like, I want to come back and play that more. I always want to go back and play more Robo Recall. In fact, when is this going to air?
I don't know. Next couple days.
Okay, cool. Then I can announce this then right now. On the 16th, June 16th, I'm going to be playing on my stream Robo Recall, and we're going to have some of the developers from Epic Games there.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, no, I'll definitely try to get it out before then.
Yeah.
So, June 16th?
Yeah, June 16th, we're going to be playing Robo Recall in the Human Interact stream. It's twitch.tv/humaninteract.
Okay. That's awesome. Okay, so let's just go through all of this here. So you've got, what's the Twitch again?
twitch.tv/humaninteract.
Okay. And then if they want to follow you on Twitter.
Oh, I'm Alexander_Mejia. And then the company name is human_interact.
But the underscore is silent.
Sorry, you got to say it because if you type
no,
in,
I know.
You get like this like egg, you know, that's there. It's like, ah, why can't I have that?
Yeah. Don't you ever wonder like who owns that? Who are you? Let me have my stuff. Yeah, you know, Alexander, it's always a pleasure to talk to you because you do have such a great insight on the industry. And you know, you've paid your dues, you've cut your teeth, you got your chops, you're doing all this fun stuff in the gaming industry, and you really understand the gaming industry better than most of my friends in the VR space do, and much more than I do. And so your insights always just overwhelming to me. And you know, whenever I'm thinking about it, it's like, man, I wonder what Alexander thinks about this. You know, we'll have to start dialoguing more on Twitter out publicly so people can appreciate the conversations. And
As long as I don't break any NDAs, right?
Well, right, yeah. Yeah, that's but that's cool. You know, I really appreciate the fact that you're filling that void by doing streaming. I mean, I know there's other streamers out there, and kudos to all of them as well. But, you know, the quality of your streams is very high. I want to encourage everyone to go check it out. You can go check out previous streams as well, I'm sure, things that you've done in the past. Not just live, but you know, your interaction with the people. How often or how many people would you say you have watching you live? I mean, I know you're still kind of new at it, but
so the last one we had, it's a weird number. We had 40 concurrents for the last stream.
Okay.
Which is not a lot for a Twitch stream, but in terms of the VR space, I feel like it's pretty good. But not only that, but you know, we put those videos up on YouTube and there's other people that roll through as right. So yeah. Like, even though it's like, there's not just like 40 people that watched you and then they left, there's usually like 200 or 300 people that roll through the channel just to check it out. Cause like no one's going to watch you there for an entire hour. Well, I'm going to say no one, cause there are super fans. We have some super fans that are there for the whole hour and a half, 2 hours that we stream for. But, you know, people come in, they check it out for a couple minutes and then, you know, they bounce off to something else.
That's really cool. That's really cool. So you're going to be playing Robo Recall. I know you've done Giant Cop. What other games have you played?
Well, let's go ahead and pull them up. You can just take a look at our page here. So here's the funny thing. I only spend one day doing the stream because I have a game to make.
Right. Well, yeah. Hey, yeah. It's all work-life balance, you know?
Yeah. So, and the funny thing is in the VR space, not a lot of people are doing work on Fridays.
Yeah, what's up with that? How do I get in on that program?
They work Sunday through Thursday. They work Sunday through Thursday.
Got it.
So you start getting like emails on Sunday night where you're like, oh, I need to answer this because this is something really important, you know, dealing with a partner or something. So the games that we've played on stream, we actually played Mass Effect Andromeda, which I'm actually still playing personally. I actually like the game. I think it's fine. Even though they just did that big article on Kotaku about like what went wrong with the game development, it's still a great game.
It's okay.
It's just not, I think, what Mass Effect fans wanted.
Right.
We played Thimbleweed Park. We played Giant Cop, Full Throttle Remaster. So we actually play a lot of 2D games too, because we try to do adventure games and story heavy games because we're a story heavy adventure like game. Wilson's Heart, Loco Dojo. I actually got to play with Sam, the developer of it. He's like really awesome. That game was a lot of fun.
Very cool.
Skyrim, Special Edition, Final Fantasy X, Eve Valkyrie, The Lab. And I just recently finished up Bioforge, which was like this really kind of like unknown game from the mid-90s. But they did a lot of stuff before like Resident Evil did. And it's kind of interesting looking at that. And I had a lot of fun with the game when I played it as a kid. So, you know, we just play games that we like, and we play games that are new for VR, and we're basically trying, like, you know how I was saying, like, hey, you know, real game companies, they try to bring in new audiences. This is our way of merging people who liked adventure games with VR, because we know that when we launch Starship Commander in the future, the same type of people who like the LucasArts adventure games, or like the action adventure games, or even the story heavy RPGs like Final Fantasy, they're going to be the same people who are going to look at our game and be like, huh, that's something kind of new. Maybe I want to try that.
And they'll be right, because they will want to try it, and it'll blow their minds, and they're going to love it. plug.
Yeah, that's the goal, right? Like, that's the goal of what you do with everything.
Right.
So, I mean, yes, it's fun. Yes, we get to see other games. But two, like, we plan out the schedule, right? You know, months in advance. And it's just like, look at all these games that we have to play.
Yeah, that's
and,
the nice thing.
And they're great. And people love them. They're just like, that looks like a lot of fun. I want to play that.
Yeah, if you can build up a good audience, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with timing. A lot of it has to do with availability of people. I would love to go and restart my Sunday streams. I've had so many people ask me, how come you don't stream anymore? How come you don't do videos anymore? Work-life balance, bros.
Well, you got to jump on my stream sometime. Yeah.
I should
have you guest on there.
I know I should. I know you've asked me multiple times, and I'm glad that you think to do that. But normally, while you're sitting there playing games and people and streaming to people, I'm sitting there hacking away at some code to try to get some deadline that I gotta meet at work.
that's the funny thing. The reason why we picked Friday is because a lot of people kind of like, all right, it's noon, I'm not working anymore, what can I do to fart off at work?
Yeah. Well,
and so, like, you know, we're like in that window where it's like, hey, come hang out with us, play some game, you know, watch us. Maybe you can't play the game at work, but maybe you can have a window open on your browser, or maybe you can just like kind of like just sneak it on your phone while you're kind of like half working or whatever.
You know what I like to do, because I've got multiple monitors, I keep one monitor open. I just work on one monitor, and then the other one's open to one of those fake hacker pages.
Just yeah, I know, the one where you can just like type anything,
right?
And it's
so
like,
also, you
all
just
this
like
text is appearing.
It also just crap is showing up on the screen, and you know, and my boss comes like, "Wow, look at you! Wow."
I thought you were like, "I always keep one video in the chamber." like you've always got like that video running on the side,
right? Yeah. Wow. All right.
That was a lot of people at a lot of game studios that I visit. Like, there's always like these artists that have like three monitors, and one of them is dedicated to like whatever Netflix show they're watching.
Yep.
I cannot work that way.
It depends on what I'm doing. Like, if I'm playing a monotonous game, I can watch something monotonous on the side. But if I'm watching something...
What? Why are you playing a game like that?
If I'm like just playing Minecraft and just, you know, building a giant dong out of diamond bricks or something, and I'm just goofing off in creative mode or checking out what's new, and then while I'm doing that, I'm watching reruns of South Park or something, you know, I can do that. But
sorry, I cannot stand that. If a game cannot engage me that much, I will not play it. See, and the game that we are making, we make sure that we treat the customer's time efficiently. Like, every single second should matter.
I appreciate the fact that there are games like that, but not every game falls into that category, sir.
Oh, I know. One, it's expensive, and two, you know, people do like this cost benefit ratio. It's like, well, I've got to play the game for 5 hours, but it's like, you know, sometimes, or I got to play the game for 15 hours, but if, you know, 10 of them were padded out with you driving around and you were watching Netflix while you're doing it, it's like, did you really enjoy that time?
Right.
I don't know.
Well, I think there's some value to that for some people, just not everyone. You know?
Yeah.
Cool. All right, Alexander, this has been a wonderful podcast. I always love having conversations with you, whether it's recorded or just us goofing off. It's always amazing. So, you know, you've plugged all your stuff. Starship Commander's coming out. Someday.
We don't have an announced date.
Someday.
Let's not talk about the date.
Someday.
But it's coming.
I'm sure I'll get an exclusive on that at some point or another.
Oh, damn. Hey,
no.
What if IGN was exclusive, huh?
No, buddy? No, IGN. Nobody reads IGN. What the hell? No, I'm just kidding.
It's only the number one video game site. Nobody reads it.
Nobody reads that. They're too busy listening to my podcast. What are you talking about? All right. Folks, be sure to follow all of my antics on Twitter. Go find me at Reverend KJR. Facebook, Reverend KJR. Periscope.tv/something. Just search for me, Reverend Kyle. Find me all over the place. And then also go to my newish blog. It hasn't even been up for a year yet. Not a 1 year anniversary yet. RevVRStudios.com, where you can catch all of my latest rants and ramblings of blogs and podcasts and, you know, videos and things like that. Go check me out. Leave me feedback. You know, if you want to email me also, ReverendKJR@gmail.com. Plenty of ways to get a hold of me. I'm all over the place. Don't talk to me on Reddit. I hate you, Reddit. yeah, we'll just leave that at that. Alexander, always a pleasure, sir. Thank you for being on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is always a lot of fun.
All right, buddy. Thank you, and thank you all very much for listening. This podcast is a production of RevVR Studios. Music provided by Jesse Spillane. Comments and views expressed on the RevVR podcast are the sole opinions of Reverend Kyle or his guests. For more information, visit RevVRStudios.com.